We're good?
Yep.
Howdy, folks. Welcome to the second episode of Hoot and a Half. And it brings such a smile to my face knowing that this is now the second episode. And also looking back on all the reactions we got from the first episode, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much to everyone who listened and left a review. I was overwhelmed and honestly brought to tears from all the reactions and reviews everyone left. I read every single one of them, and I just want to say once again, thank you. And it's crazy because, you know, we're going into this, you know, at the infancy stages of this podcast. This is only the second episode, and I'm so excited for what's to come. But for where it's at now, I just want to say how grateful I am for everyone who has listened, and hopefully we'll still keep listening. And also thank you so much to you, Mike, for being a part of this with me.
Thank you, Matt. Yeah, well, to echo what you said, just launching something like this and just seeing all the positive reactions, the comments, the likes, the phone calls, the texts, people who want to be guests on the podcast. I mean, I don't think we could have asked for a better launch episode. So big thanks to Josh for being our first guest on the show, and just excited for what we have coming up. And yeah, episode two is here.
And it's here. And do you I don't know if we could ever top Josh Peck. So we went with the second best, who is my dear friend, Jason Nash. I've known Jason all the way since the Vine days. He was one of my first friends I actually met when I moved out here to LA. You may know him from YouTube or David Dobrik's podcast he has with him called Views. And yes, so without further ado, here it is, the second episode of Hoot and a Half with me, Matt King, and Mike Sheffer, and our special guest, Jason Nash.
This is already so funny. I'll let Matt talk first.
Jason Nash is here. Jason Nash is on my podcast.
Guys, the candles are lit. The White Claws are cracked. Welcome back to Matt King's podcast.
You know the name of the podcast?
You never told me. All you said was, can you do my podcast? You don't give me any information. You're too busy with your wonderful Matt King life, hanging out with Cody Coe, who's hilarious.
And occasionally Post Malone. Once a month.
No, I know that Matt King lifestyle. You're always jumping on yachts. You're always going places.
Okay, what do you think the name of this podcast is?
Matt King's Yacht Podcast.
Oh, God. No, it's not.
Post Malone's My Brother
I don't
podcast.
Even know Post Malone.
Let me keep guessing. Let's keep coming up with names before you tell me.
Okay.
Vlog Squad Intellectual Podcast.
There we go. You nailed it.
What is the name?
It's Hoot and a Half with Matt King.
That's perfect for you.
And then Mike Sheffer here too as well.
Is Mike going to be on the podcast?
Oh, he has a mic in his hand.
Yeah. But I mean like every episode.
I'm the co-host, baby.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Mike, you're a born performer.
Oh, thanks,
Jay. You just don't have the followers.
So, Jason, welcome to my podcast. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure having you. We've known each other for about, I think, what, 5.5 years?
Yeah.
Do you remember the first time we met?
At Coachella.
No, it wasn't at Coachella.
Oh, it wasn't?
I know. I knew that Jason wouldn't remember.
I can't remember my kids' names, but so you tell me.
Oh, what are your kids' names again?
Shit. Walter and Charlie.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, why?
I remember the first time. Well, the first time you like came across my radar was like on Vine back in the Vine days. It was back in the Vine days. I'd been watching your Vines and stuff, and I had like started getting a little bit of attention on Vine, and then you DM'd me.
I did?
You did. You DM'd me on Vine, and you said, "Funny Vines, man."
Did I really?
Yeah. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh my God, Jason Nash is messaging me. That's and you had like so the verified funny. Like.
So Jason was a big deal on Vine at this point too?
Yes. Okay. Like you, I think you were, yeah, in the millions and millions of followers. Wow. You were already out in LA collaborating with all the top dogs.
I'm so glad I did that.
And then you know what you, well, then I responded. I said, what, Jason Nash? I had to look at your profile and see if it was real. I thought it was fake, but no, it's really you. Thank you so much, man. It means a lot. And then you responded, hey, thanks, man. Also, can you re-vine one of my vines? And it was like for like a Badoo ad or like Hot or Not or something. And I was like, oh,
it was
okay.
Not a Badoo ad, was it?
I think you wanted me to re-vine an ad for you.
Well, you know, it's taken me a long time to understand protocol that the young people have with the internet. I understand now, you know.
But I was flattered. I really was. But I just didn't Revine you.
Okay, well, that story doesn't paint me in a great light. So now we're going to spend the next 40 minutes winning the audience over, but that's fine. I'm a former stand-up comedian. I know what that's like.
But then you really redeemed yourself when we finally met in person.
Well, I thought I'd always been nice to you, Matt. I don't know why you got to lead with a shitty story like that.
I just can't believe you slid in my DMs, like, flattering me as this top dog from Vine, and then you're just asking me to do, like, a favor for you.
No, that wasn't what I was doing at all. I'm sure I really did think you were funny. It's not like I DM'd Soulflow, and I was like, hey, funny Matt, man.
Because
I do think you're really funny, and I always have. And there's just certain people that you can see right away, and you're like, you know, David was one of them. You were one of them. Zane, Heath, you all stuck out to me on Vine for sure. Alex.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Even though you didn't have the most followers, you're like, oh, they're way funnier than everybody
else.
Yeah.
No, it really meant a lot, and I'm glad that you did, you know, reach out to me in the beginning.
And then what happened? Then what was the next horrible thing I did to you?
No, then it wasn't that horrible the second time we met.
Welcome to character assassination with Matt King.
When we finally met in person, it was during, I think that what they call it was Social Media Week, which is like, I don't know, some conference or whatever. And then Collab hosted an event for all the people at Collab in LA. I just moved to LA.
And you stole my parking space. I was all set to get in the parking space. And there's Jason Nash, the guy that wanted a Revine.
We did end up going to a parking lot, you and me together by ourselves.
We did.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is back.
I hope to smoke pot.
No, it wasn't pot. It was actually cigarettes. This was back when I had been smoking cigarettes, and I knew that you were smoking in my car? No, we were like kind of talking at the party, and then you were like, I'm going to go have a cigarette. And I was like, he was like, you want to come on? I was like, oh, yeah. And then we went and had a cigarette together in the parking lot.
And this was like your first one-on-one hang?
Yes, our first one-on-one hang. And that was like before people were like vaping or anything like
that. And what did we say?
I think we just like kind of got to know each other and stuff, and I maybe brought up the thing. I called you out about messaging me on Vine.
Did you?
For a Revine.
And what did I say?
We laughed.
Oh, we did?
We laughed.
Okay, good.
No, I didn't take it that seriously. Okay, I just thought it was like a funny opener. And then I think I was just like asking, like, oh, what's it like living in LA? What's your story and everything like that?
Matt's very inquisitive. He's one of the most inquisitive people I've ever met, which I love. And Matt will just come up to me and he'll be really funny. Just out of nowhere, he'll ask me questions about the 80s. So like Madonna, like that was a thing. I was like, oh yeah, Madonna was fucking big. And he'll be like, that's so cool.
I know. I think one time I was like, hey, Jason, didn't like Crispin Glover like almost kick David Letterman like on live TV? And you were like, Matt, you know references that none of your friends know and you probably shouldn't even know.
There's always jokes that I say, no one laughs, and then I'll look around the room and I'll see Matt giggling like, oh, Matt, at least Matt got it. You too, Mike. You get the references.
Yeah, that's
you got Matt, Hindenburg the other night.
Yes, that was a good one.
Yeah, I had a Hindenburg Matt, joke the
Matt
other
has,
night.
Matt is like a sponge of cultural and just human knowledge. Anything that ever happened that has a history, Matt knows about.
I can't help it. I'm inquisitive.
You consistently prove all of us to be dumbasses. And at the same time, no one fucking listens to you. Like, you'll literally be like, that chemical combined with that chemical is not good. I'm telling you guys. My professor at UT Austin tried this, and everyone's like, okay. Come on, let's go blow shit up.
Well, I'm going to be nothing but inquisitive to you during this podcast.
All right.
But I just really want to get to know you more and just know your life and where you're at and everything.
My life is very it's very fast paced, and I'm trying my best. I feel like my life is just hanging on
to the front
of the car while someone's driving, you know, and your fingertips are where the windshield wipers are, and the person's just going, and that's my life, just holding on. Really,
you hustle hard though. You're the best. You juggle so much, and
when you have two kids, you don't. You know.
Has it always been fast paced? Did you have a fast paced childhood? You're from Boston, right?
From Boston, grew up in the suburbs. Went to University of Massachusetts, got my bachelor's, got an internship at Saturday Night Live.
Hold on. Let's take it back a bit.
Okay.
You're growing up in the suburbs of Boston, so it's not
fat
hard
kid.
Boston.
No, not at all.
It was a pretty like easy childhood.
My childhood wasn't easy. My family was like financially not the best, and you know, had a lot of problems with my dad growing up.
Right.
But like, it's all good now, and I was overweight. I was like a very nice kid. I was very thoughtful and very sweet. and too sweet. You know what I mean?
Wyatt, kind of.
Yeah, just like Wyatt. Yeah, just like my son Wyatt, who Mike knows. And so you know that served me well in some places, and in other places it didn't. I always had friends. You know, I was always friends with like the cool kids, but I was like the lowest tier of the cool kids.
But were you the funny one?
Because I was funny. Yeah. Kind of funny. I mean, all my friends were funny, though. Everyone in Boston is funny. And like I always say about Mike, every Jew is funny.
Oh, that's right. Both of you are Jewish.
Yeah. Tell Matt the joke.
He's not going to get it. No one's going to get it.
Wait, I think I know what the joke is.
The Seinfeld joke about, okay, so this is a joke that Jewish people understand, they laugh at, but Gentiles, who are people that are not
Mike
Jewish.
And I are both Jewish. Yeah. Let's see if Matt gets a joke.
The joke is two non-Jewish business people are walking down the street, and one guy says to the other, "How's business?" And the other one goes, "It's great."
I get it.
I knew you'd get it.
I get it.
David didn't get it.
Right. No, because you're talking about business is great. And for the Jewish perspective about business, yeah, of course it wouldn't be great. They have something to complain about. Yes. Okay. It's hard when you ask someone who's not Jewish why it's funny. Because then you have to get them to admit that, like, well, a Jewish person wouldn't be that jazzed about.
Nobody. Yeah. Jews. Yeah. They don't answer questions in a positive way. It's always either a complaint or another question.
Mike had the best example the other day. He was like, if you ever ask me about how things are going, my life's pretty great. Like, you know, it's going pretty great right now. But if you ask me, I'm always just like, oh,
we just did
fuck.
Ask you.
We just did it.
It sound, you
we
sound
literally
like
just did it when you were in the bathroom.
Well, just on this podcast, you said you feel like you're hanging on to the back of someone's car that's swerving around. I think by any metric of a human being in America, you're living a fantastic life.
Yeah. But every day I'm like, oh, God.
Millions of fans, loving kids, successful career.
Yep. Two great kids.
What are you complaining about?
But
an ex-wife I'm still sleeping with. I'm kidding. That's a joke. That is a joke. She has a boyfriend. He's a wonderful man. I'm kidding.
But when you were younger, did you go to Hebrew school?
We couldn't afford Hebrew school. We couldn't. We didn't. My parents like started to go to the temple, and they wanted all these fees, and they were like, "We're not going to temple anymore." And I was like, "Okay, great."
Oh, so, but yeah. did you at least have a bar mitzvah?
No, couldn't afford it. No, couldn't afford it.
No,
because I didn't go to school. Because I was just like, and then at that really like turned me on the Jewish religion at a young age. I was like, oh, fuck these people. Like, yeah, you know, I can't afford to hang out with you. Then fuck it.
Uh huh.
You know. But then my relatives are all Jewish too, so it's ingrained in me just the Jewish way. Yeah. Eat more and overeat, and, you know, save money and. You know, so.
Yeah. And you said, like, obviously, home
and
life.
I married a Jewish woman.
Oh, did
so
you
I'm
have like, to?
I'm attracted to Jewish women.
You are.
Oh, yeah, big time.
But you would have married her if she wasn't, like, you would have married someone who wasn't Jewish.
Oh, I would have married. I can marry a non-Jew, too. But okay. I'm definitely, like, when I meet a Jewish girl, I'm like, oh, I even, like, the other day, like, Natalie had her friend Sammy in town.
Yeah.
And she's Jewish. She's from Long Island. And just immediately, I'm like, oh, I can talk to her and get along with her. My mom's a Jew. My dad is Catholic, and he's, like, big and strong and macho, and my mom's like, and so I have both of those things in me.
Oh yeah. I can totally tell.
And no, I was always trying to be funny, and I guess, you know, I really loved, like, anytime you could get a joke off and make somebody laugh, that was like the best feeling in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of any specifics,
but in high,
I was funny in high school.
Were you in like theater at all in high school, or like, or were you in like?
No, because all my friends thought theater kids were losers, so I didn't do theater.
So were you a jock? What did you do?
No, I wasn't a jock either.
You were just kind of like,
I just hung out.
Hung out.
I played basketball.
Okay.
And I wasn't good.
But then you got into college at UMass.
I went to UMass with like, I wanted to be a sports broadcaster. I was really into sports.
Same. Oh, well, I didn't want to be a sports broadcaster, but I just wanted to be like an online news, or no, I just wanted to be a newscaster. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
is that a major that you can study for?
Yeah, it's just journalism, broadcast journalism.
Oh,
broadcast
wow.
journalism. Then you make a tape, and then you send the tape out. And if you're really good, you'll get hired in like Spokane, Washington, and start your career.
So you go to college, you're thinking that you're going to become this big broadcast or journalist. You're going to be the next Anderson Cooper.
Yeah, I got a job at the local news station, and I was like answering the phones there. And I was like, okay. And then I did acid. And then the week after I did acid, I picked up the sports page, as I always do.
Yeah.
And I started reading the sports page, and I stood up in my house, and I put it down, and I said, none of this means anything to me.
Yeah.
Why do I care about this at all? And I was like, I knew every statistic. I knew, I could tell you like everything about the Red Sox, everything about the Celtics, everything about the Bruins, everything about the Patriots. Like it was all we did. And then I would go, I went, then like the next week I went to my uncle's house and his, he really loved that I knew everything about sports because he did too. And he would be like, so what do you think of, you know, fucking Fred Lynn or whoever was hitting then? And I would be like.
And it just changed. You just
I
hadn't.
Like, I don't know anymore. I don't like sports anymore.
So it was a delayed effect where it wasn't during the trip. It was a week later.
No, I don't know. I saw Bob Dylan play once on acid. And yeah, after that, I didn't like sports anymore. I don't know why.
Sports is pretty fascinating because you have to get so invested in other adults competing against something that you have no real vested interest in.
And sports happens based on like the community and people that you're with. Like, you know, if you had the connection with like, your grandpa and you're watching all the time, it's a great thing to talk about. But yeah, you get to a point where
the act of like, let's get together and watch the game. I love that. Like we're going to make wings, we're going to have beer, and that passion I love. But then when I sit down and watch the game, I go, well, I don't care. Unless it's like Tom Brady and he's like in a playoff game. That's about the only thing I can watch.
Yeah.
And maybe
it's
got to
be like historical. When the playoffs come, that's when like I'm tuning in and I'm, you know.
But it seems like you had a realization that you are bigger than the things that are outside of you.
Yeah, I guess so. I never really thought about it, but I think you're right.
And that might be like maybe when you dialed up your comedic talents where you realize, hey, I can make something for myself. I don't need to watch other people make something.
I guess so. Yeah. Yeah. And then I was always a fan of like Saturday Night Live or whatever. And then I remember I told my parents, I was like, I was in a car in like Newton, Massachusetts, and I was like, I was in college, and I was like, I want to be a comedian. And they were like, what? They were like, what do you mean? Don't be a comedian. Like, you're working at WBZ Channel 4. You know, you can get a job there. Uh-huh. And I was like, no, I want to be a comedian. And they were like, you're not funny in any way, you know? And then
they really said that to you. You're not funny.
I mean, they didn't say that, but I mean, that's what they were saying. That's what they were thinking. Like,
so
you're not
more,
funny.
You were more funny to your friends than your parents.
I mean, I don't even know if I was that funny to my friends. All my friends are funny. All my fucking friends are funny. In fact, when I started to do this, I went to all my friends in Boston and I was like, you should fucking do this with me. Like, you're way funnier than me. And we tried and they just didn't have like the need to do it. Like my friend Topher, who's so much funnier than me, I like brought a camera out and I was like, let's like shoot a sketch or something. And he was like, nah, I can't. He's like, I just want to drink beer. And I'd be like, okay. Like, and then it just didn't work.
So was there a stand-up scene at your college? Or when it was like, from the moment you said, I want to be on SNL, like what was the first step you took going towards
that? I probably got the job at SNL and then I was like doing open mics. And then after a year, I quit SNL and just performed all the time. And then I got an audition.
But how? Nobody. Yeah, hold on. Slow down here, Jason. Because, like, not everybody gets, like, a job at SNL. Was it an internship at first and then it turned into a job?
Yeah, first it was an internship. My mother drove me down to New York City. She was like, I don't know why you want to live here. It's so far. New York's awful. You're not going to like it. And my mom's, like, a great person. But I think she just didn't want me to go to New York. She was worried about me. And I got in a three-piece suit. And I went up to 30 Rock in a three-piece suit. And
had an interview
I had an interview with SNL. Yeah, okay. I had an interview with Dateline, and I had an interview with SNL.
And this is before the internet.
Yeah, how
so
did
what
you,
are you
go about getting an interview at SNL? And what year is it, 1980-something?
This was 94.
How do you go about pre-email
getting that? Were you calling?
You would just call. You would just get the phone number for NBC and be like, hey, can I get the intern program? And then you send a resume, and you wait to hear. And then they'll call you and they'll be like, hey, we'll see you. So
you're in your three-piece suit.
My three-piece suit. And I had an interview at Dateline and SNL, and I didn't want the Dateline one. I was like, fuck, I don't want to work at Dateline. It's a good show, but I don't want to do that. I want to work at SNL. So I went to the interview at Dateline, and then like maybe an hour later, I like sat. And then I went up to SNL in the three-piece suit. And the minute I walked off the elevator at SNL in the three-piece suit, I was like, fuck, no one wears three-piece suits. Like, this is even Lorne will wear like a sport coat and a white shirt, maybe.
Lorne Michaels, who's the executive producer of SNL.
You know, it's SNL. They're writers. They're all in sweatpants and sneakers. And it's like, you know, and I felt so stupid. And then I sat and had the interview, and they were like, sure, you can work here for free.
Were you thinking the whole time, like, I need to say something funny? Like, I gotta, did you, like...
No, I was so scared. I was probably just like, I'll do anything to work here. I love it so much. I'll work so hard. Like, whatever you need, I want to work here.
And they were like, we like you. Great.
For whatever reason, I can't even remember, Matt, but they like me and they hired me. I don't know why.
Did you make them laugh in the interview? No. Do you remember anything about it?
No. I didn't make anyone laugh at SNL when I was there.
Did you think you were going to get it when you walked out of the interview, though?
No. Like, no. What? When I walked out, I was like, oh, no, there's no chance in hell that they would have me. Because the other kids that were there, like, there were some other kids there, and you could see, like, they were really polished kids. They were like... from like really good schools. They probably had connections in my mind. And the people that do get jobs there, it's always like Paul Simon's kid.
No, that is true. That is true.
Not that Paul Simon's kid worked there, but for example, like someone like that.
Right.
You're like, oh, of course they're here. Like they literally, their dad's performed on the show 7 times, you know? Well, Paul Simon's kid doesn't need to intern there. Paul Simon's kid is fucking hanging out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's always connected people. And SNL is so about being connected and who you know.
So you got the job.
I got an internship. I started, so then I would hang out with, like, I would sit and, like, watch Sandler and Spade write.
Wow.
Whoa, and then, like, hold on. We all know you as, like, this guy in David's videos, but this life that you had before.
Sure.
This,
I have many lives.
You moved to New York, like, paint the whole picture.
So I had no money. I was like, my father's like, you can't go. Like, we don't have any money to send you. My mother somehow found the money. I paid $900 a month. I lived with a dancer, a male dancer. And we lived in a railroad apartment. I had like a bed. I had to walk through his room to sleep in my room. He was really weird. He had fucking 4 cats. he had thousands of magnets. He collected magnets all over the apartment. And one time I lost one of the magnets and I couldn't find it. And it was like a really big deal. Anyways, I would wake up in the morning and then I would just stay there. I wouldn't leave. I would be there at 8 o'clock when they all got in. And then I would leave at like midnight.
Are your duties like, are you just getting coffee? Or
anything they fucking wanted. Like, one time I went and bought, like, Adam Sandler, like, perfume for his mother. Like, one time I cleaned out Spade's apartment. Like, anything they needed. I was like, that's why now when anybody works for me, like Taylor, or Taylor doesn't work for me, but, like, this is great advice for anyone out there. Like, you don't know how much I appreciate someone who's like, yes, done. Let's do it. Okay, we need this? Great. Because, like, that's how I was. And I was like, because... I didn't care. Like, I just loved the show so much and I just wanted to, like, be helpful. I knew I couldn't write jokes at that point, so I knew the next thing I could do at least is just, like, be there and be a fly on the wall and learn. And then I met Norm Macdonald,
was already on the cast.
Like, so I did, like, an internship that fall. I went back to school at UMass, finished my degree, and then that summer, Mike Shoemaker, who was the producer then, called me and he was like, hey, do you want a job as an intern? Or not, no, as answering the phones. And that was $400 a week. And I was like, oh, fuck, yes, I totally want that. And then that last year I was an intern, Sandler and Spade and Farley left. And then Norm came in and Will Ferrell and David Koechner and just Tracy Morgan. They all came in that year. And then Norm took a liking to me. And then, you know, comedians are funny. They need people to laugh around them. You know, like, and that's what I was for Norm. Like, I thought he was so funny, and so he would take me everywhere. He would be like, I love this guy because he just fucking thinks I'm funny, I think. And so he took me everywhere we'd go. You know, he'd be like, I'm going to do this, and, you know, and I'd be like, okay. And so that was good. And then, and what I got in return was he just knew how to write. He taught me how to write jokes. He had like all these theories about joke writing, and then he introduced me to Jim Downey, who was like a legendary writer there. So just sitting there with them, you get to learn a lot, you know.
And were you writing down like everything, all the wisdom he was telling you, or was it just the energy of being around him?
I didn't have to write it down. It's just absorption, you know, just watching somebody do it. You're like, oh, okay. I get it.
When you were at SNL, though, as an intern, did they ever include you in any of the sketches, like as background?
Yeah, they would put me in the background and stuff.
So there are some SNL sketches out there where you're in the background? Because, yeah, I've had friends from college who have had internships at SNL, and they've been, like, included in the background of sketches.
It was nice, too, because then you would get paid that week a little extra. You'd get, like, $600 from ASCAP.
Whoa.
Or something like that. You'd be like, oh, sweet. Like, that meant a lot. Or, like, they were really nice to me. Norm had a great theory about joke writing that I'll never forget. He was like, I always said, oh, the punchline should be as far away as you would think. That was his theory about it, and that always stuck with me.
Wow.
And when you were there, were you thinking like, I gotta get on this show though? Or
yeah,
you,
at that time I was like, I gotta get on the show. Like, I gotta get on the show, but I was like, oh, that was my dream. And then so I guess I'll keep trying this. So then I started performing around town and like, you know, like going up and doing character work and trying to come up with, you know, stand up material. And then I got an audition there the same year that Fallon got the show. And I remember seeing him at the audition, and I remember being like, wow, that guy's really good. And
did you watch his audition?
I saw it later.
Wasn't it like the walk-a-thon? I didn't see it.
I remember hearing it was really good.
Yeah.
That's what I remember hearing.
What did you do for your SNL audition?
I did all my characters. I used to do like,
what were
I used
they?
To do like a Jim Morrison character, like a cover band. I did Matthew McConaughey. I used to do like a teenage girl named Heather, who was based on my older girlfriend, who was like 32 and I was like 23. This really like girl that was like like the world was like too much for her, and she would cry. And anyway, I don't know. It's there. The audition's there. And then yeah, I didn't get it.
Were you devastated? Or like how, like?
Nah, I wasn't devastated. I didn't really expect to get it. I was like, I'm not going to get it because I'd already worked there. I think that kind of hurt me.
Yeah.
And I could see that they have like, he has tropes that he hits. You know what I mean? Like Jimmy Fallon, Andy Samberg, Pete Davidson. They're all cute, kind of heartthrobby, kind of dorky, and really funny. You know, like
uh-huh.
That's that trope. There's a fat guy. And I could just see like, that's not maybe my thing. And I was just green. I just wasn't prepared. You know, even in the audition, I remember I asked for like a CD player, and they like let me sit there for like a minute to test me to see, like, they'll do that. Like in the audition, they'll test you to see like what you do under pressure when no one laughs or shit like that. That was really awkward.
Oh, wow. Wait, they gave you a CD player?
Well, I needed to play some music, and for whatever reason, the CD player wasn't there. It was supposed to be there. Because the music.
Oh,
the
they like purposely set you up to like not have the CD player.
I'm not saying they purposely set me up.
Yeah,
but
okay.
No one moved quickly to find me that CD player. I was just up there forever, just drowning.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I mean, it's like it was cool. It was a good experience.
But
I still watch the show.
Yeah, yeah. But so after that, you like still work and hang around in New York, but then you end up moving to LA.
I got a show here in LA. I got
the
VH1
show.
Yeah, I got a sketch show in LA that was a music-based sketch show with
called Random Play.
Yeah, it was with Michael Ian Black, Michael Showalter, Nancy Walls,
Jim Gaffigan.
Gaffigan was on it. I used to know Gaffigan really well. I used to hang out with him.
How did you go from being rejected to SNL to getting on a show in LA?
Just kept performing
in clubs in New York.
Yeah, in clubs. And I remember after I did the audition at SNL, they all came out and they were like, that was fucking great. Like, I can't believe you were the intern. And there was a moment where I was like, oh, maybe I'll get it. Like, they like me. But yeah, it didn't happen. And then, and then from there I did that show.
But you had connections with all of those comedians, like before you guys were all friends and then they included you, or did you guys all audition and then get casted in that?
Those guys, yes, Michael Ian Black and David Wayne. And Michael Showalter, who none of your listeners will know, but or maybe they will.
Maybe they do. Maybe I sure know.
They
so
did
I know
a, they did a show called The State, and
right.
Then they did a show called Stella. And then New York, at that time, they had the hottest nightclub show, which was a show called Stella, which was like the three of them on stage. It was like Steve Martin had like three sons. They were all. It was very absurd. It was very brilliant, and it was like, the comedy is. I love it. But it's like anti-humor.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the funniest things I've ever seen is there's just a woman sitting alone and Michael Ian Black started talking to her. And he was just like, well, now I see why you're sitting alone. Like, because, you know, after just because she was so boring, you know, like it was like kind of mean, but it was like funny mean. You know what I mean? Like they could pull it off. It was like charismatic. They were dicks. They were just complete dicks. But they could pull it off because it was like, I don't know, they were charismatic.
And how many episodes did Random Play have?
I think we did like 10 episodes.
And it was on VH1. You're on TV.
Was
that like a huge high for you? Like, oh my gosh, everyone back from midfield's going to be watching me on TV. Or was it?
No. I don't think so. I don't think people saw. I can't remember. I don't think people saw it. I don't remember people being like recognized from it.
Yeah, because that's interesting. Like just a different time when like it was like pre-internet where it was just so accessible. You know, people could just watch nowadays whatever they want whenever. But that back then you just had to sit around a TV and watch it. Like
yeah. I feel like now you can choose who you like. So the fans are more passionate. Like I chose you. I chose to watch you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Whereas VH1's like, I guess I'll watch this. It's like a bunch of guys.
That's what's on. You can't change.
Yeah, it's a bunch of guys in wigs and, you know. But you know, so now I think like fandom is much more fervent.
Are you making good money during this time? Are you still like getting by? Are you nervous about life? Or are you like confident where it's going to go? Like,
yeah, I felt pretty confident. Like I had an agent. I was like auditioning. I was like, you know, just nonstop.
And you're doing UCB as well on top of all of that,
right? I
did
some classes there. Just a lot of auditions, a lot of like testing for pilots. Cause when you're in your 20s, like there's a lot of parts,
right?
You know, there's a lot of like, oh, they need a neighbor, they need a best friend, shit like that. And I hated it. I hated auditioning. I hated, you know,
yeah,
I just didn't like it. Do you like to audition?
No, not really. I guess I hate the process of auditioning for somebody who's just asking me to come in so they can just fill in people, you know? Like, it doesn't feel like they're actually genuinely interested in having me. Like, that's where, like, you feel like, I don't know, you just feel like a...
You want to go somewhere that you're needed.
Right.
Like, that you specifically are needed, not just anybody that fits your specific demographic could be replaceable.
Yeah.
The last audition I had was so bad. It was last year. This woman called. She was a fan of the videos. David's videos or all of our videos, whatever. She was like, you got to come in. And I was like, I don't really. And I went in.
And what was the part
and
for?
And I walked in and she was like, oh my God. She's like, you came. I'm so glad to meet you. Like, I'm such a fan of the videos. And then I went in the audition and I was fucking awful. It was like a sitcom audition where like, you know, you had to have like the beats and the rhythm. I was terrible. I was out of practice. And I was like, not doing this anymore. Because it's like, you know.
But you had been on a few sitcoms in the past, right? Or you've been
I've been on sitcoms. I've done pilots. And then, you know, it just, I don't know, man. Just time goes on. And then you just kind of get sick of it. You're like, I don't want to go audition for this anymore.
Right. And now was.
And then I went into a phase where I was like, I want to do my own thing.
Okay.
I want to do my own thing, which was like, okay, like I sold a couple movies that I wrote. And then that was that phase. And movies take forever. So that was like a wasted years. And then luckily, the internet came along. And, you know, now I'm happy. Like, I wouldn't really trade this for anything,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But you did make one of the movies that you wrote.
I made two.
Two movies.
Two movies. Well, one is Jason Nash's Married. But I think what I read, was it originally a Comedy Central series? And then...
I made all these webisodes for them. They saw my one-man show. I did a one-man show and then with like jokes. And then I made a bunch of webisodes for them. And then in that time, like everybody got fired. And then, they bought webisodes, but I made a movie instead.
Oh.
And it was such a small amount of money that I was like, oh, I don't care. I'll pay them back the money if they're unhappy. And I just made a movie instead. And I brought them the movie back and they were like, this, what the fuck? Like you're supposed to make webisodes.
They paid you to make like six episodes and you came back with a 2-hour movie?
An 82 minute movie. And because that's what I wanted to do. I was like, I just don't care. You know, like, and I was at that point where I was like, I don't give a fuck anymore. Like, this is it. This is what I'm doing. And if you want to come after me for the $10,000 you gave me, come after me. But this is what we're doing. So the woman was like really pissed. And then I was like, and then my manager called, like, yeah, they're really mad. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't know what to tell you. Like, this is what it is. And then eventually, like, this head of Comedy Central saw it, and I got a phone call one day, and he was like, oh, my God, he loves the movie, and he's going to put it on Comedy Central, and blah, 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 blah. And that was that. So that was good. I mean, I have to say, if I could give advice to anybody out there, don't listen to anyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you'll never get anywhere, like, listening to people. They're
the
worst.
So they gave you a bunch of money to make a bunch of episodes.
Yeah.
And then you just got, like, because there's a lot of, Matt showed me the trailer before. There's like, a lot of people in
it. It's a loaded cast.
That's like, yeah. You would see that in, like, theaters world, like worldwide. It's a stacked
cast. I had a lot of goodwill back then where I was like, I was performing a lot and I was seeing these people and I wasn't like making any money, but like people were like, you're doing a good, people would come up to me and be like, you're doing good. Like you have to keep going. And I'd be like, okay, I will. And then I had a lot of goodwill then. So I was like, can you come for a day and do this? Can you come for a day? And that was the only thing I could do then was like, oh, just beg, borrow, and steal. Just be like, ugh, got to shoot. Call Nick Swartzen and be like, can you come for a day? You know, There's one scene in the movie that I am really proud of where I go, and it's with Nick Swartz, and I go to interview to be on Nick Swartz, to be a writer on Nick Swartz's sketch show. And Nick Swartz, who's, I think Nick Swartz is one of the funniest people in the world. And he's like, yeah, man, love it. It's really funny. And then he's like, you got the job. And then I begin to cry in the audition. I mean, in the meeting, and it's so awkward. That's probably one of my favorite things. I'll show you the scene sometime.
We were at South by Southwest, and we were there for an event because Busy Phillips was having like her own talk show, and you and me were, Mike and I were standing like by the stairs when she was walking in, and I had had a few drinks, and I just go, Jason Nash is married. She goes, she's just gave me this look. It was just like, we love Jason. Anyways, as I'm taking stage, it just completely tossed her off guard. But I just had to like put it in her ear.
She's funny.
But you said the movie was based on like a one man show that you had. Yeah, in the land of tall buildings and
Lucas red, done his research.
Red
Jesus
fire
Christ.
Engines.
In the land of tall buildings and red fire engines.
What kind of title is that? What?
I don't know. I was crazy. I would just do crazy things. I didn't care. I didn't have anyone telling me no. Like, I have all you guys now being like, don't post that. You know, but back then I was like, this is what I'm doing and this is my art. Like, I was much more artistic then. I would rent a theater and be like, it's a show, and it's going to be really avant-garde and whatever, and it's whatever. And it just, that was just what I was doing.
The show? Can you give us like a synopsis?
I did all kinds of shows. I had two partners that I did sketch shows with. I had one-man shows. Like, the one-man show that Comedy Central bought was about like having a baby and not having any money to like feed the baby, and like having a wife that worked and feeling shitty that you didn't have a job. It was basically about that. It was about like our marriage. That was basically what it was about, my marriage. And that was what the movie turned out being. The movie's ultimately, it's about a husband and wife that, like, you know, are having marriage problems.
And did you have a close, like, support group of, like, friends and fellow comedians you were bouncing these ideas off with? Or were you, like, very individualized in, like, your approach being like, no, this is it. I know it's funny.
No,
and you would just go in.
I did have, like, one friend named Matt Price who directed my show, who was really good. And he would, like, say, like, no, cut this out or don't put this in. Stuff like that. But yeah, I mean, no, mostly I was just working in a vacuum.
Yeah. But you still had like no clue that this whole wave of like Vine would come along and
no,
YouTube
so the move,
in this whole
insane
phase of your life, unpredictable.
I remember seeing like YouTube come out and I was like, wow, that's so cool. I would love to do it. And I just didn't. I was so dumb. I should have tried, but I never tried. And then the movie that Jason Nash is Married came out and Vine came out at the same time. And I was like, oh, I'll jump on Vine and maybe it'll promote the movie or whatever. And then Brittany Furlan, who I knew from, because she dated a stand-up comedian and she would be there at the club. She wouldn't be doing stand-up.
Uh-huh.
She would just be there.
Yeah.
And she was like this cute girl that like, you know, like was just like really bubbly and bright and really nice. And then I saw her on Vine and she was like, had like a million followers or whatever she had. And she was like, oh, let's make some Vines together. And then she was the one who blew me up on Vine. And
wow.
Then suddenly I was like, had some visibility on there. And I was like, oh, fuck the movie. Like, this is way more, not that it's way more fun. Like, I would love to make another movie. Like, I would love to make a movie with all of us, but it's just impossible.
I know.
Like,
it's
impossible. We're all so busy.
That's interesting. What do you think about a movie? Like, what do you have an idea? Have you thought about this?
Yeah, like I've had like tons of ideas. Like, I get pitched ideas all the time to do movies with you guys. Like, all the time. I mean, I would love it. Like, I've had a lot of people pitch me movies. I've had people come to me to write movies for the Vlog Squad. Like, I don't even bring them up because I'm just like, I've had little ideas that, like, I can't say right now because I forgot them. But I've had ideas for Matt that I've wanted to do. But movies are so, like,
they're challenging to do.
Yeah,
or was FML making that, like, a really tough experience?
I mean,
like,
no, it wasn't tough. Like, it was too easy.
Okay.
You know, it was like, I wrote it. They were like, we'll give you the money. And I was like, okay, great. And then they were like, you have to shoot this in 14 days. And I was like, oh. So then I got myself fucked because then I couldn't get any of the people.
Oh, I remember when you were writing that. You were living in that tiny little apartment.
Yeah.
And you were like, Matt, come over. I just need you to like look at the script and stuff. And like,
I remember
like just going through and he's just like, do you think there's anything funny here? If you were like so fast paced. I was like, I thought I was just going to do like a slow read through it. But you're like, no, keep going. And you were just like,
oh my God,
drafting as many little jokes and notes as you could. And then, you finally went into production for it. I was actually in a scene, but it was cut, I think, from the movie.
Was it?
Yeah. But it was a really, it, remember, it was in this big house in the hills, and Matt Kutchel was in it, and he was like some religious guy, I think, some big Jesus like Viner.
It wasn't Matt Kutchel, but it was somebody else that looked like Matt Kutchel.
Oh, I can't remember who it was. Yeah, but I had a scene where like I had to act like I was a big fan of the religious Viner, that character,
yeah, I
and
remember,
I was breaking into the house, and I was like, "Please, I'm your biggest fan." And then they kind of like dragged me on the lawn. No, it's okay. I don't mind getting cut at all.
No,
I mean, you guys had to film as many things ever.
But say you're in it, no one would know.
I still have never seen it though.
But it's was fun, like to make a movie. But then after that, I was like, and then after that was done, the same day that that movie came out, Vine and did horribly. Vine went away. It was same exact day. And I remember calling Brandon being like, bro, Vine's gone. Like, what's going on? It's over. And he's like, yeah, dude. He's like, you didn't know? And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, yeah, we've known it's going away for a while.
Yeah, a lot of us knew it was
giving
away
for a while.
They
gave you guys a heads up, right? Like, uh-huh. A lot of the creators, they give you like, a 2 week heads up?
I felt like I knew for 2 months.
I think there was a 2 month heads up.
We had got a message from one of the people working at Vine was like, hey, heads up, this is what's going to happen. We would advise that you like just try to save as much of your content as you can, because
and also
eventually
like,
all the data was going to go away with it as well.
And your followers, like if you didn't transport them over to YouTube or Twitter or Instagram, like
so interesting.
There are definitely people who had a career that overnight didn't anymore.
Yep.
But I felt like I knew like it was coming though, because during that time, micro video content wasn't anywhere else. Like Instagram didn't have video, Facebook video wasn't as big as it was then, and Twitter like hardly had video. So like now everyone, you can get that like itch of entertainment satisfied elsewhere, but Vine was the only place where you could sit down and just watch like just short videos. But now it's elsewhere. But I mean, it was
and then I remember seeing you start to film with Zane, which I thought was so cool, and I just thought that was interesting. Like, I don't know. I just thought you were always. I always thought you were so funny. Do you remember at Coachella when I gave you that speech?
Oh yes, at Coachella. Oh, I don't even know who was performing. I think it was like maybe Calvin Harris was. No, it was Cascade. And Jason got us all together like in a big group, like a big just like football like huddle, and was giving us this huge speech about how much he believed in us and that the next few years are going to be the best years of our life. And it was like we were all like in tears and so moved by this.
I think you were the only one in tears.
I know I was in tears. I know Waleed was in tears. But it was like such a great moment though, and you really like saw the future. And it's like everything that you like kind of said was gonna happen has happened, which I think is like
can just tell people that are gonna make it. I don't know. Not that I have like a great eye for talent, but I feel like so much of it too is just attitude. You know, and funny. Like, you can just see if someone's funny or they're not. I think I know if someone's funny or not. And and when you probably do too. Mike, you do as a manager. I'm sure you can be like, okay, that's not their strong suit, or it is.
Right.
But yeah, you can just tell like someone like you is so funny. David, even when I wasn't, before I even vlogged with him or anything, I was like, you just tell he's a fucking funny ass kid.
Yeah.
You know? So yeah, and Alex, I thought Alex was so funny. And it all worked out. Like, we all, I can't even believe it worked out. I don't know how it did.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
it's literally like a dream. I pinch myself every day. I was just driving from here, and I was leaving David's house. And as I drove by, I just heard, there were four teenage girls ducked down in their car. And I drove by, and as I drove by, you just heard, oh, my God! Like that. And I just thought to myself, wow, I can't believe this is real. I can't believe it is real at all. Every day I'm like, this is fucking nuts. Even just to have like an audience, especially because for so long I didn't. Oh my God, I spent 20 years like just destitute, no money, nothing, no hope of anything happening. And yeah, it's just nuts. And then I met, and then yeah, and so then after Vine went away and the movie didn't do good, and then I met David, and then that was it. It's weird. So fucking weird, man.
Like, you've basically been attempting to get to where you're at right now for basically as long as like David's been alive.
Yeah, 100%.
And so the perspective that you have on just life in general and failure is like super interesting for even Matt and I, who are let's call it a generation younger than you.
Sure.
Can you talk about why you didn't just give up and get a job somewhere? Like, why did you keep
going?
Good
question. I just really, really wanted it. I wanted it so badly. Like I just love to create, and it's the only thing that makes me happy, really. And that was the big reason why I got divorced too, because it'd be like Saturday night, and like I just want to go out and make a Vine or
right.
shoot content or go in my room and write. Like that's just all I care about. And even when I went to do stand up that night, that David saw me. I was in a horrible place. I was like installing speakers for my friend, like working like manual labor. And I was like, just like so like awful. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to go do stand up. I'm going to go perform for like 20 people. And I know it'll make me feel better.
And David just happened to be there?
Yeah, he just happened to be there.
Were there already Vine people hanging around or attending?
Yeah,
and
yeah, like you? I think Brandon was there.
Okay.
But for whatever reason, he came in. And I've never asked him about it. I've tried to ask him on our podcast, and he never answers me, and it always gets cut. But I don't know why he was there.
Yeah. I remember around that time when David was starting to vlog, and there was like a niche party at the Getty Museum.
I was there.
And you guys were there. And then I remember you were there with your kids, and then you were down on the lawn with David.
Yeah.
And he was with his like little camera filming, and I remember this look in David's eyes looking at you because you were making some joke and he was filming you, and how just like captivated and excited
he
was.
Really?
Oh yeah.
That's so funny.
I'll never forget that. And just him just like he had this smile where he was just like, I love working with this guy.
Really? Because
I could just see like because you are just I wouldn't say like a bucket full of fun, but you're just it's endless like what can come out of you.
Aww.
And the possibilities are just yeah. endless as well. And I think that was just a really cool moment to see because that was like the beginning of it all.
That's so
and
cool. I wish I had seen it.
Yeah.
Well, I've never seen
him. I was watching.
I've never seen him appreciate me. So.
do you have any hobbies? What do you like to do when you're not running around trying to lasso up some content?
Let's see. I like to hang out with my kids. I love to take my kids for pasta.
Oh, yes. And you love Vampire Weekend a lot, too.
I love Vampire Weekend. I love having kids that are into music because we go to a lot of concerts and we've seen Vampire Weekend, 21 Pilots. I've seen 21 Pilots four times.
Four times?
Maybe five.
I think.
If you count like the half sets at like K-Rock,
yeah.
Acoustic Christmas and shit like that,
yeah.
that we go to. But yeah, I mean, music's like huge for me. Like I love, you know, I love even like the TikTok songs that like I'll ask people like the other night, like I'll ask people, I'm like, what song is that? Like, and then they'll tell me and then I'll Shazam it. And like, I love all types of music. I love to, when I go to the gym, I love rap. But I also love like alternative music. Like sometimes the other day I was listening to Pavement in my car.
Pavement?
You've never listened to Pavement?
It's so
Matt King.
Really?
Is this
hip hop?
No, it's like
music.
90s alt rock.
Oh,
like,
I'm
really
terrible
obscure.
When it comes to 90s alt rock. Like,
oh,
I hardly know
that?
Anything. Well, I want to say, like, I would like to be into it. It just never got ingrained in me.
Well,
I don't know.
What's hard for probably you is now there's so many bands that mm-hmm. you could listen to go back and listen to Pavement.
Yeah.
You've probably got like 100 things you're supposed to listen to and you don't.
I know. I'm like a bit of a Pitchfork snob. Like, I'm always checking that website to see, like, what the latest and greatest.
Yeah, I've never
like,
been to Pitchfork.
Yeah.
And I should try it. But most of the music I get from you guys. You play it off your phone.
You are in incredible shape now. Like,
no, I'm not.
Yes, you have transformed your body so much over the past year. I gotta say,
I'm trying.
I took a glance at you across the room when we were at David's the other day. I'm like, damn, Jason's looking great.
You too. You look great too.
Oh, thank you.
It's a lot
thank
of fun.
You.
Should I ask you some questions?
Ask me some questions. I mean, this is no. You can't interview the interviewer.
Okay,
all
right, cool.
I mean,
Do you have a question you want to ask Matt?
What would be your ideal, like, situation work-wise? Like, stay in L.A. and work? Like, or would you, like, want to move out of here and work?
That's a good question because I really value my friends a lot, and I can't imagine my life, like, I don't even post this, not being surrounded by the friends who I love so much because I feel really connected with them. But, like, where I would be in the future, I don't know. That's a hard question to answer because I didn't foresee any of this, so it's hard to predict like what the future would bring. All I know is I can just
like, for me, like, I'll always live here.
Yeah,
pretty much. Unless I got like really rich, I'd move to Santa Barbara.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I think the reason Jason's asking is because Jason has said this to me before, and correct me if I'm wrong, but he believes that you have unlocked like an ideal set of circumstances for life where like you make a good living, you do what you want to do when you want to do it. You don't have a lot of stress, like things that are stressing you out, like deadlines or posting schedules, like, well, not yet at least, but like Jason and I have talked about how like you have sort of figured out just by being yourself, you are a success.
Yeah, I'm very like intrinsically motivated. Like, I guess that would be the way to see it. Like, money doesn't really motivate me. It's just whatever I'm happy doing and what I'm like passionate about. I think the biggest thing I need to be harder on myself and be a little bit more like selfish, saying that like, no, I can be my own, have my own voice, and that people would find it interesting. For the longest time, I think I beat myself up where it was like, no, no one wants to listen to you, Matt. But now, like, that, lately,
that's
it's been like
one of the most challenging things that for any creative to push through. Believe me, for so many years, to develop your own voice,
yeah,
to think what you have to say is worthy enough. That for a lot of people, that doesn't come till later in life. I'm always so impressed with like any of you guys at such a young age that are like, here's my podcast, here's my video, here's my thing. Like, it's incredible. Like, most people are just too scared to do it.
Yeah. You know? And I think I like carry like a bit of like guilt with this lifestyle because I was so hard on myself, like academically, and thinking that, you know, I got to go to a big state school and then I got to get a big boy job right after, which I did for just like a little bit after college. And I realized I should just take the leap and get involved in this more creatively with the internet stuff. But I think like all of my friends from back home and back in college and everything, they're, you know, doing the traditional job. And it's hard sometimes where I feel like, should I not be doing this, or is this something that's
you feel guilty because you've carved out a nice life for yourself and you're doing what
you know
want?
What I think, yeah, there is like a bit of guilt. I don't really like describing it
Survivor's
as guilt right now, because I'm like barely just like letting that go, or no, right now I'm in the process of really letting that go from myself, you know what I mean?
I don't think it's guilt. I think that it requires a certain level of audacity to say, hey, this is mine. And I don't think you have a reason to, or have developed an audacity to say, this is mine, because you've done so well helping other people do what they do, being in their videos, being in their podcasts, helping them create content, that there's an audacity required to say, no, this is Matt King's, this is mine.
I am the captain now.
And now I'm doing it.
Pretty much.
That's what I'm saying. For you to say that is a big step,
yeah,
which you haven't had to do.
100%. I went through the same exact thing, just being like writing jokes for people in stand up and then not having the audacity to like tell the jokes myself, like it, just to know who you are. Like, but it's an internal thing that is just so hard.
But we're doing it now. We're having
Hoot and a Half with Mackie.
Yeah, you
and
are
and
doing
I,
it
no,
now.
And I'm so happy.
It's also important.
And I'm so happy that you're here and that you've
It's really important, like, not to beat yourself up.
Yeah, no, I've been a lot more easy on myself over.
I don't beat myself up anymore.
Yeah.
And I fuck up every single day. And, you know, now it's just like, I'll try. Doesn't work out. No, it didn't work. That bit didn't work. Okay, back to the drawing board. That's the greatest thing about David, is that he has no, he'll never be like, oh, that was dumb.
Yeah.
Or why did you do that? Or like, he'll be like, okay, we'll just try again.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so that you just feel like you can fail all the time. And I do. He has this really funny thing he always says. He'll go, whenever I say, I'll do this thing, we'll be out, I'll go, turn the camera on. Like that. Turn your camera on like that. And he'll go, it's never funny when you tell me to turn the camera on.
Yeah.
No, this time it's going to be. and then it won't be. And he'll be like, he'll turn it off. It's like, didn't work. And I'm like, okay, you're right. I'll wait for you to turn the camera on.
Was there a specific instance or like something that happened that made you stop being so hard on yourself, or it was just a natural progression?
I probably not until like I got to film with all you guys did I let go of everything, because I felt like a net to fall in. So now I know that like it, I can now it's, I now I'm in the best place, which is like I can go 1,000% and know that yeah, it'll probably fail, but if it works out, it's great. Like last night I was at Saddle Ranch and I was kind of not doing anything. So I just stood outside and I acted like the bouncer for like an hour and was like IDing people. And it's really fun, like as an exercise. And then I, you know, like, and I just was like just doing that just to do it, you know, and to like work on ideas and chops and thoughts and things like that.
Yeah, know? Feeling free to fail.
Free, exactly.
Being
yeah.
Feeling free to fail is definitely yeah. powerful.
Because I know that like there's a net here with all of you guys. I know that like
if, oh, Annette, I keep thinking that you were saying like someone's name.
Like Annette,
Annette
Benning?
Yeah, yeah.
Annette, well, like, my friend like, Annette.
Who's it, Annette?
No.
Yeah.
Hey, Annette. Yeah, it's a catch. Yeah. Because, but that makes sense, right? Like when you come up in, you have your one audition for SNL, you have your one movie, you have your one night to perform. Yeah. Like if you fail, it's all over.
That's right.
With this, every day you could fail 100 times.
Yeah.
And as long as you get it right once, today was a success.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Vlogging's not that hard either. I mean, it is, but it's like, you know what's really funny is I tried to vlog with some other people and they weren't good at it. Not everybody can just be like, hey, what's up? And like be themselves on camera. It's interesting. Like Matt can.
It took me a while to like get used to it because I remember.
You do it in the best way possible.
Well, now I feel really comfortable doing it. Originally, when Zane was like vlogging, I was like, I don't know what you're
the
what
perfect
you're
amount
of
heightened, too.
Yeah, you become like a 2.0 version of your real life self. Like when a camera's pointed at Matt, it's like, where's this guy
well,
been all day?
I hate seeing like everyone come over and they're trying to film, but they're so frustrated because, you know, sometimes like Zane and Todd, they're not always like in the best moods. But like I also know when Zane wants to film, he wants the best of yourself. When Todd's filming, he wants the best version of yourself. So I'm like, yeah.
But that's like that's a very desirable and valuable skill to when someone points a camera at you, not only be yourself, but be a better, funnier, smarter, more charismatic version of yourself than if you were just sitting on the couch. Like,
but it's also the only place that the skill is valuable is vlogging.
Yeah, and in the YouTube space, yeah. Like if Matt walked onto a set or you walked onto a set where you have to memorize lines and be a character, it's a different skill set.
And that's why a movie with all of us would work because none of us can really act. I mean, Matt can, and maybe like Jeff and Jonah. I mean, I haven't seen them in anything long form, but like,
and I think Aaron can act.
And Aaron?
I think so. I think Aaron has some chops.
But I don't think she has the desire to.
Yeah. I'd love to. I would love just to be given a script all the time. I've been like watching The West Wing lately, and I've just been like, God, I just want to be in an Aaron Sorkin film. So, so bad.
That would be so sick. Well, I'll just say, you know, I think that it's really fun. You guys are two of my favorite people. And sometimes it's really hard in the group to like, I like everybody so much that I can't get to everybody. Like I can't get to spend quality time with Matt King. You know, Mike is a little easier to spend quality time with. I don't know why. Maybe I think,
well, because he's always
there.
You're
a little more in demand.
From a scheduling perspective?
Like either you're out with Zane or like you've got your
girlfriend
or you're like going to see a show.
Yeah.
Or you're like going somewhere with Todd. But Mike seems to be like around a little bit more. So I've connected with Mike more than you.
Well, I think because he's always down or Mike is always at David's during like the downtime when they're like editing and stuff. And
yeah,
Mike has a fantastic perspective on like what matters and what doesn't and what kind of flows and what doesn't. So like David really values Mike's like consultation on
100%
editing stuff.
Yeah.
And Mike's also a big thinker where he puts like big you just know this space very well.
Yeah.
And how things are run with, I don't know, businesses and
I just also like making stuff too. Just like you guys, like it is fun. But also, yeah, Matt also has a lot of friends, like an absurd amount of friends here. Like,
do
every
you really?
Dude, yeah. I moved here a year ago. I would say at least 3 times a week, if I'm out with Matt, someone I've never met before comes up to him and it's like their best friends.
Really?
He has so many people that just
Isn't
know
that
who he
hard?
Is.
Isn't that hard?
It
keep,
is
keep
hard. And I make it hard on myself because of it. But I love having a lot of different friends. Like, I really value the Vlog Squad. I love them. They are like my family. But it's also like kind of work at the same time. And I think it's very important to have like a balance between like your work friends and then also your friends outside of it. Like, because I went to college, I have all my friends from college who like live out here, and then I have my other friends who were my former roommates and everything that I still keep in contact with.
But isn't that hard on a Friday night when you have like 5 things you could do?
kind of, but then it's nice, like, going out and hanging out with people, and it's not, like, content-based. Because, like, if we're going out with, like, David, it's like, oh, we are going to show up at a bar for, what, like, 30 minutes and then go to another place and for a club and stuff. And it's, yeah, like, you never really know where your night's going, and there's only so many seats in the Tesla, you know?
Yeah.
But is it hard? Yeah, it is hard.
Is it hard being popular?
But I think,
I'm not going to lie,
I have a tough time. I have a tough time saying no to people, and I'm always hung up on disappointing people. And Mike knows it, because, like, I was just stressing out this weekend because I have some friends coming in town, and the thing that I promised them that was going to happen couldn't happen. And I was too scared to tell them that I couldn't get them in to this event that I told them I was going to get them into.
Matt's a nice boy from the South, and we're tough guys from the Northeast, so we know how to say no. Matt is very...
Took me a long time.
Matt puts other people before his own self-interest.
Yeah.
And some people will take advantage of that, but mostly it's you just are way harder on yourself than you need to
be. I'm too hard on myself.
He asked me once every 48 hours, are you mad at me? And I'm like, no, I've never been mad at you in the 3.5
really?
Years I've known you.
I even texted Mike today. It was like, sorry, I'm so manic.
And I was like, dude, you had to go to the gym in the middle of the day. That's not, like, you're fine. Yeah. Do what you need to do. Yeah, like, it's okay to put yourself first.
Yeah.
If you could do me a favor and drop that. Because that, not that it affects me, but, like, that's so unnecessary.
Yeah, I think
it's completely unnecessary.
Because I think when I am making things about myself, or I'm like, oh, I gotta go do this, I'm being selfish.
It's
like,
not being selfish.
I know. I interpret it as being selfish because I think growing up, I was, like, always told, you need to stop thinking about yourself and start thinking about other people, kind of a thing. Like, that.
Now we're getting
that started. Was like some childish, like, ingrained psychological, like, I don't know. I don't want to just view it as a malfunction, but it ingrained in me too deep where I have a tough time being like, no, I'm going to do me and I'm going to do this. I always think like, oh, that's bad if I'm thinking about me too much.
Are you looking at like a past version of yourself when you hear him say that?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Like, I could feel like that too. I've definitely been like that, but you have to, I'm still guilty of it. I'm still like I won't go to the gym because, like, my kids are sitting there by themselves and, like, stuff like that. And so now I'm like, you know, so you know what I did?
Yeah.
I told my daughter, come to the gym with me. And then, so now I've got her going to the gym with me. So now there's no more problem.
Is she working out or is she doing her homework?
Like,
what, is she doing squats?
She just gets on the elliptical and she, like, does, like, a mile.
Wow.
But she, like, wants to do it. She's like 11 going on like 18. And so she's just very mature. And so she's like, I don't know, for whatever reason, she thinks it's cool to work out. So it's problem solved.
I like going to the gym, though. It's the most, like, consistent thing you can do every day. And it's just in there, you know what you got to do, and you do it. I like the structure of it.
If you've been going to the gym for a while, if you have, like, you know, three, four months under your belt, that's the best.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, wow, like, I'm, like, feeling stronger.
And you wake up and you just, like, feel it in your body, like, I got to go. I got to go. Yeah, that's the best feeling. You were, I don't want to bring up when you were in amazing shape, but you were, like, ripped at one point.
I was ripped.
Like, when you knew him or
It was at that Coachella, that spiritual Coachella where
I was
Jason,
ripped. I was 170 pounds at one point.
Like, P90X body, dude. I remember you were, like, had your shirt off at Coachella and just, like, the lights from the stage were hitting you and you were just, like, had your bandana on and he was just...
Damn, it was fun being ripped.
But you're in the process of getting it. No, I can see your body, like, completely transforming.
If that was just a couple years ago, you can get back there pretty quickly, you know?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but I just stuffed my face in the middle of the night.
What do you stuff your face with? What's your vice?
I got this low-carb cereal, this no-carb cereal. Let me tell you something. It's fucking the same thing.
It's healthy, but you binge a lot of the healthy stuff. Yeah. Like, Zane will have those, like, sriracha puff, or those, like, sriracha puff things that are made out of, like, chickpea puffs.
Yeah.
And he'll have three bags of them.
Yeah, you can
and
still,
like,
be healthy and eat like an asshole.
Processed is bad. I mean, even like a healthy chickpea thing, it's like, it's all fried.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, yeah.
If I had all the money in the world, the best thing I think would just be, like, having, like, consistent, the right food that you need for,
like,
your
getting
body.
A personal
yeah,
chef.
It's the process of, like, getting the food.
Ooh, chef.
And making it happen. Like, because, like, I don't like cooking because I never feel like I'm good at it. It could always be better. And
it's a skill that takes a lot of time to develop.
I can lose so much weight when I cook for myself, though.
You do? Well,
yeah, because I'll just make like a skirt steak and steamed broccoli, and I'm like, wow, this filled me up. I don't need anything else. I'm
my satisfied. Issue is I don't eat enough. I need to be eating like 3,000, 4,000 calories a day.
Oh, wow.
And I can't because I don't know. I have a very fast metabolism. I'm an ectomorph, so I'm like naturally skinny.
An ectomorph?
So an ectomorph. There's like three body types. There's
is that like where you can turn into an animal? Or no, anamorph. That's anamorph.
You're an ectomorph. You're an ectomorph.
What does that mean?
You're like naturally like lean and skinny.
Yeah, I think
you know
so.
What I mean? Like you then there's like endomorph and mesomorph. Endomorph is like you're like a middle. I think Jason, you're like an endomorph. And then mesomorph is like someone who naturally
gets celery,
bigger.
But you still are huge.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully you don't get fat from eating
celery.
You
should start every podcast explaining something like that.
Like, oh, what, like
really
a fun fact thing?
Yeah, like, by the way, guys, the human body's broken down into three types.
I mean, I could do that, but then I don't know if I want to be like a Brainiac podcast where I am just talking about
no, knowledge
stuff.
Is like, power, man.
It really is. I love Emma Chamberlain's podcast, though I've only listened to like one episode. She really likes taking on subjects that she knows nothing about and learning about it and then taking your audience on that journey. But I like getting to know people, and that's what I kind of want
to. Not saying the whole show, but maybe, you know, you throw something out like that. That was interesting. I love when you tell me stuff.
I should have done some more research. What about Boston or about like.
No.
Or what? Like random facts that.
You don't have to do any more research. You're having a good time, man.
No. What? I'm like getting defensive right now. Like, you're not satisfied with this podcast.
No,
so I've amped it up. But I definitely want to have you on again in the future. So
yeah,
when, like,
let's
I
do
film
it.
We're still getting our chops here.
Yeah, we're still getting our chops.
No, you guys are great. I mean,
is this better than recording with David?
Well, how do I say this without getting in trouble? He's based. He has a very very specific idea of what that podcast is, and he's right in a lot of ways. And so there's just a lot of things that like we don't talk about. For instance, like we never talk about creative process. Or anything like that, which you guys, I'm sure, we've tackled in this podcast. So there's just a lot of things that are out, and that's not like, and that makes for a certain kind of podcast. The podcast is supposed to be like his vlogs,
story, you know, based, and
just the story, with a laugh, something that's funny, and then you move on.
Right.
And he wants it to move really quick, and I respect him for that. But it does make it really really hard to make the podcast. So we'll sit there and try to come up with. You know, literally things that happened during the week that didn't go into the vlog.
Yeah.
So, and if something really funny happened, it goes into the vlog, and now you're left with, okay, these are some B stories that are still funny that aren't visual. And so it's just hard to do.
It's very similar to how it is on the Unfiltered podcast. Like, I love being a part of it, but I think our biggest challenge is, finding what are we going to talk about that wasn't in a vlog, or how can we expand on that? And then, but at the same time, I love talking to Mariah, Zane, and Heath all the time, but I'm such a curious person where I want to talk to somebody who I haven't spoke with in a long time.
I mean,
you know, and those are the podcasts I listen to, are interview podcasts.
Me too.
Like I need that. I need just a fresh conversation with someone I know nothing about. Or I do know plenty about you, but you know.
Well, no, me too. I listen to podcasts all the time. I love listening to Pete Holmes.
Oh, yes. You Made It Weird, Pete Holmes, I listen to like pretty religiously. Now I'm a big armchair expert with Dax Shepard.
I have to listen to that. A couple people have been telling me to listen to that.
He's the best. He's just a man's man.
Yeah.
Like, he is.
I have listened to it once or twice, and it was great. I what I mean is I need to listen to it more because it is good.
Pete Holmes is great as like a comedy podcast, and Dax is also really funny, but you know, you're just having a sincere conversation. Like my podcast, like I don't really care about, it needs to be funny every second.
I think
the idea that we have, you and I, Matt, have a lot of really interesting, super talented, successful people that we're friends with, that we can have a conversation like this and get a perspective that like your internet persona maybe hasn't talked about. Like this whole SNL thing, I've known you for however long I've known you, never heard that SNL story. Like
that to me
is super interesting.
Yeah, I was like kind of like recapping with Mike before you came over, like, oh, well, Jason did this, he did that. And he was like, what?
I was blown away, Jason.
Huh?
I didn't, this whole life that you had about SNL, and you had that show with Jim Gaffigan. I knew nothing. Well, like,
that's so funny.
This is the thing that I was talking to Matt about before. You and I are East Coast guys, Northeast. Can you share just a thought or perspective on like being from the East Coast, moving here? Do you still feel like you're a New Yorker walking around this foreign land of LA? Do you feel like you're an LA person? and share perspectives on those differences and what that means.
What an interesting question. I guess in my mind, as I walk around, I always feel like a transplant, you know.
You still do after 20-plus years?
Yeah, even though I'm not, and even though I wouldn't want to go back there. Yeah, you always feel like a transplant. You're always, and that's probably the problem with LA too, is everybody feels like maybe that they're not, this isn't their home. And so people are just more flippant and more like disregarded, you know, because it's like, oh, is any of this real? Is how I feel a lot of the time. Like, was what's happening real? Did I just hear teenage girls screaming as I drove by? Like, I don't know. Like, But at the same time, like, I love LA. I love like what the opportunities it's afforded me. I love the weather. I love being in shorts in February. Like, it's unbelievable. And probably the best thing is just like the creative energy. That's just the people you meet, to be able to be in like a collective of YouTubers that all create together. Like, where else could we do that? We all take advantage of the city so much. I mean, like, you know, we're always going to like record opening parties or movie premieres. And so, yeah, like, I don't know if I answered the question, and I don't remember the question, but.
No, you're answering it very well. Yeah, no, I agree. Like, but do you guys, I kind of have like, a question or like a.
And I feel bad for people. I always meet people. Oh my God, this happens all the time. They're either visiting from New York or they've been here for 3 months and they'll go, do not like it here.
I can't understand that.
Do not
it's
get it.
It's hard to recommend LA to people.
Because like, you have friends. You have good friends.
Yes.
Trust me, I've been in the place like before I knew you guys and I didn't have good friends. It's awful.
Yeah. It's what you make of it when you're out here in LA. And it's like a lot of it comes down to friends. Because I've had friends from college will hit me up like, yo, think about moving to LA. Like, do you think I should do it? And I'm like, yeah, go for it. But like, biggest thing is find a good friend base.
If you don't have a good support system, and this is for anyone listening in another part of the country, do not come here. Do not come here with no friends.
Because it can crush you too.
At any time, Mike, you could be here all alone and you go over to David's house, go to my house, go to Zane's house, and have family. And that's something that changes it.
Wow. Imagine I came here and didn't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would suck.
I would have went back.
I did it. I was here for years without knowing anybody, and it was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just hard. In New York, though, you meet people.
Easy.
In New York, they're
it's
more
so
likely.
Easy.
Yeah, and you'll have friends of all walks of life. You'll be friends with a fucking circus performer in New York. This is my friend Joe. He works at Ringling Brothers. You'd be like, really? Yeah. He tames the tigers. Like, right? All kinds of people there. But here, everybody's an actor. Everybody's an inner person. Everybody's a TikToker. That's it. Or a manager or an agent.
Everyone's trying to level up here.
Yeah.
Do you guys think that L.A. lacks a sense of, like, pride about it, though? Different from, like, being from New York or anywhere else?
Yeah, because no one's from here. Like, what he said is we all feel like transplants.
B.J. Novak was talking about on Dax Shepard's podcast, I think. Or maybe – no, it was – no, B.J. Novak was talking about on Pete Holmes' podcast, like, if he were to ever run for mayor, he's been, like, interested in it. What his biggest thing would be would to, like, really – try to instill like a better sense of pride in LA. Like even kids who like grow up out here and are from LA, like really aren't as proud of it as someone from New York. And I don't know if that's just because of the mixture of people who move here and everyone are transplants all the time. It's constantly recycling.
Yeah.
That there's this lack of like LA identity. Like we are so comfortable in the city, but we don't like feel the pulse
Nobody
of the
feels
city.
Like I'm a, there's not even a word for it. Like, you're a New Yorker. What is an L.A. person?
Los Angelin?
But, like, that's the thing.
Angelino.
You don't
Angelino.
Even know what the phrase is.
I
like,
know, yeah.
In New York, really you could have, like, an immigrant from India talking to a first-generation Italian. And
they're
then,
New Yorkers.
Yeah, they're
there's
all New
no,
Yorkers.
They're it New Yorkers. No matter there's what There's no you Angelinos. Are, no. Like, there's no
that's so
way to describe because we're just this circus out here.
It doesn't matter your demographic, history, what language you speak. If you live in New York, you're a New Yorker.
Can I answer the other question?
Yeah.
You know what I'm excited about?
Yes.
To see what my kids grow up to be.
Aw, that's the best
that's
answer.
Whoa.
About. That's the probably thing I'm most excited about. Because at this point, like, I'm, like, done. I'm like, I don't really care what happens to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, I don't. But
I mean, like, I care, but, like, as long as I have a roof over my head, like, I don't really care. But I am really interested to see, like, I'll tell you what's interesting is to why this is really hard when your son plays music and you're like, is this good or do I just think it's good? Because is he good or is he my son? That is so interesting.
He is incredibly talented. Your son, when Jason was still our roommate, Wyatt would have guitar lessons over at our house.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I would be upstairs like changing and I start hearing like downstairs just like Vampire Weekend riffs just on a guitar perfectly. It felt like Ezra Koenig was downstairs performing in our living room.
Not perfect.
Above average, not, very good.
He's like, very good, but he's not perfect. That's what's really hard.
Well, I mean, he's just getting there. The kid's going to be a stud when he walks out of high school, or who knows? He's going to be joining some big band, and you're going to be like, you need to finish high school, Wyatt.
No, I'd let him leave right now. I wish. The thing that this is what, not that I want him to be a star or anything, but I understand the magic of being able to make music. Mm. I can't do it. I went to Charlie Puth's house once. I watched him make music. I didn't want to leave. I just wanted to sit with Charlie Puth for the rest of my fucking life.
Yeah.
And every time I hear Charlie Puth's new record, I say to David, I go, I was there. I was there. I heard that. We heard this before anybody. Like, I just love the idea of it. And even to go in and watch the songs that he's working on, I'm like, this is it. This is it. This is fucking it. Better than making
movies.
Like,
seeing musicians, though, and knowing yourself that you are not a musician and you have no talent.
Yeah.
It's like this club that you're never going to be invited to.
Exactly.
It's so frustrating. Him and Adam will sit here and just play their guitars and everything, and I'm just like, you just want to join in, but all I can
and
do
then
is just.
Mike pulls out the guitar one day and he's like fucking amazing. And you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Mike's good at guitar. Mike's a musician. Like, God, why couldn't it have come to me? Do you know how many times I've sat up at night recently and thought to myself, okay, I have a little bit of money now. I am going to go full on into guitar lessons. Wyatt has a great teacher. He has a great piano teacher or a great vocal teacher. I am going to go full on. I'm going to go 3 hours a day. Not to be famous for it, but just so I can play.
Do you think you could do it? Like, I feel like you have to be young. You have that plasticity in your brain where you soak it in.
I
can't be on beat at all.
Yes, you can. I believe every person is born a musician. and
for $69.99, you can buy my three DVDs.
No. Dude, Todd Smith.
He's
two years ago.
Yeah.
Didn't know how to do anything.
Scott could not rap when he first started. Scott did live shows. We did live shows with Scott like less than 2 years ago. Motherfucker couldn't remember his lyrics.
I remember.
Now he's playing sold out, like 1,000, 1,200 people. Like, it's incredible.
We are innately musicians. The instrument, maybe if, you know, a piano versus a guitar versus a trombone, maybe different. But I fully support every single person trying to become a musician.
It just doesn't make sense sometimes how you guys like, can play a guitar and another guy comes with a guitar and you already know what he's doing and you guys just make a great melody together. Like, I don't see how, like,
and it, that's
it doesn't seem real.
They can hear it.
But what I'm saying to you is that you can learn that. And once you do, like, I feel like that it literally is another language that I know how to speak and every musician knows how to speak that language. And I cannot stress how valuable
you.
Yes, you can.
No, I want to.
I think everybody can and should.
Would it be guitar for you? Piano.
I think piano.
I would love to play piano.
Have you talked about this publicly yet? Like, maybe you may have talked about this on David's. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
About the whole Phineas thing. You sent.
I can talk about it.
Oh, have you said it already?
What?
I told you Phineas DM'd me about Wyatt's song.
Did not hear this at all.
I did tell you.
You absolutely did not.
You told me.
Oh, maybe I told you. Yeah, this is a really funny story. I'll try to tell it quickly to not bore everybody. But Wyatt, my son, he's 14. He had to write a project to do an essay. His teacher's like, can I write a song? She's like, yeah, sure. So she, you know, placates him. It's like, it's kind of annoying, I'm sure, for the teacher. Like, but he does everything in song. That's how he. So anyways, he's like working on this song for months and months. He's staying up till 5 in the morning. He's getting grounded. And my ex grounded him. He's never been grounded. She walked in at 5 in the morning. She was like, go to bed. He's like, I can't. It's not done. Like, really defiant. Like, she's like, okay, you're grounded. No phone, blah, 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 blah. Anyways.
What?
Yeah. So the song.
Let me talk to her.
Okay. So the song. So anyways, the Sunday night before I go to him, I go, Wyatt, I go, you got to finish this song. Just finish it. I don't care what you do. I'm like, put it on the thumb drive, go to bed at 10 o'clock. He's like, okay. And I walk out of the room. I go, hey, what's the song about? He goes, oh, it's about the Holocaust. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I read the book The Night. And yeah, it's about the Holocaust. But anyways, so then cut to, he sends me the song, and it's like really good.
Yeah,
like, it's
this,
fucking crazy. And I couldn't believe it. It was like really powerful.
It's
and
like a cinematic score
crazy,
from a
yeah, cinematic scores, and it sounds like Arctic Monkeys at points. It sounds like 21 Pilots at points. It sounds like Hans Zimmer at points.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then you hear it, and you're like, because he's my son. I'm like, I mean, this is fucking really good. And I called my ex-wife. I'm like, this is really good. And she's like, do you think so? She's like, I think it's good, but we don't know if it's actually really good. And then anyways, I'm sitting there the other day at my computer, and I got a DM from Phineas, who I don't really know that well. I've only met him twice, but like huge fucking fan of them, obviously. Like what they've done is incredible. My kids and I listen to their music non-fucking-stop over and over again. Like it like that, like it like that, like it like that.
Wow.
Right? Like non-stop. And he DM'd me, and he was like, bro, your son's song, because it was on our podcast. And he was like, your son's song is so good, blah, blah, blah. He has a big...
What?
You didn't know this?
What? I went like this in my chair. There was somebody there at my house shooting a video. I went, ah! Ah! Oh, my God! They're like, what? What? What happened? I'm like, Phineas likes my son's song. And they're like, who? And I'm like, from Billie Eilish, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, wow, really? And
what?
And, you know, just because what they did was so incredible, like, that no one asked for that music. Do you know what I mean? Like, their music, the record that they made, it's like, it's incredible, but I could have seen them making it and no one even paying attention to it. In other words, it doesn't sound like anything. It's not derivative of anything. It's you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me when Kurt Cobain came out with fucking In Utero. Mm-hmm. Or not In Utero, the first album, Nevermind. He came out with Nevermind and everybody was like, what? What is this? What is this? I remember I was in college. I was like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is so good. This is sounds like nothing we've heard before. It is completely brand new. The lyrics sound like the Beatles. It's not hair band. Like, and that's what Billie Eilish reminds me of, where it's like, oh, it sounds like it was made 40 years ago, and yet it's like really popular. Like, that's where I give this generation some credit. They made her famous. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's like really, really, really good music. Like, and especially Wyatt, he regards Phineas as like, that's what Wyatt would want to be. He would want to be like Phineas, the songwriter, not necessarily the front man.
Crazy.
Crazy. And the night before, I was sitting with Wyatt and Charlie, and Wyatt was like playing his guitar, and he was like, Wyatt, says, Charlie, please, please, will you play with me? Please, I need someone to bounce off of. And she's like, no, I don't like the type of music you're into. Like that. And I was like, oh, Charlie. And then the next day we got the DM from Phineas, and I was like, Charlie, you're going to play with Wyatt now? Because Phineas thinks he's really great. She was like, did you tell him about me that I can sing? And I was like, no, I didn't.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow.
But just that little bit, because he thinks what he does is like not good. And I was like, just that little bit of encouragement from someone like that, or even from you, Mike, that little bit of encouragement means so much. That's why I'm always like trying to get you guys. When I met Dylan Francis, I was like, oh, just talk to Wyatt just for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Just,
no,
just
I,
give him
I
some
texted
encouragement.
Wyatt all the time. Like when he was doing that,
oh, yeah.
What was it? A recital to do the Eddie Van Halen song.
Eruption.
Like, he sent me like 10 versions of it, and he was like, which one do you think is good? And I was like, I mean, I think you're a great dad, Jay.
Oh,
I will
thanks.
Say that.
I try.
An amazing brother.
Like, it's very underrated to be a good dad.
Yeah, it's fine.
Most dads are not good. Like, they're not. That's why there's so many assholes. Like,
yeah.
Most people don't have good dads. I think Matt has a good dad.
I met your dad in Dallas.
Was it Dallas? Oh, you did. And then I think you met him also in New York City. You met both of my parents.
Yeah, I met your mom too.
Yeah, yeah.
I've never met Matt's dad, but Matt's dad.
Oh, yeah. Mike's always like, oh, your dad's so cool.
He slides into my DMs. He slid into my DMs, and I was so excited. He responded. I had put on a Van Morrison record on my Instagram story, and he was just like, hell yeah, Van the man. And I was like, Matt, your dad DM'd me about Van Morrison records. And I was just so. And then so him and I will like talk about coffee or records. And like, I never met the guy, but I could just tell if he made a kid like Matt and he's. Likes Van Morrison and likes what I like. He's got to be a good dude.
He's a good.
My dad's a great guy.
And Matt's dad sent all those jazz records to Wyatt.
Oh yeah, he did.
Oh, see, wow, yeah. So being, I will, I guess we can probably wrap it up here. I just want you to know, Jay, Jason Nash, I think you're a great dad, a great person.
Man. I'm trying.
Jason, thank you so much for coming on this podcast. It means so much to me. I love you. You are an incredible soul, an incredible human being. And
anytime.
It just means so much. And we have to do this again sometime. 100%. Once we get the video version and all of that set up.
So we're doing this here, just audio for now.
You can do video here?
Well, once Matt moves into the new house, I think we're going to start doing a video setup there.
I think, that will be ideal setup.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Great. Well, right thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Guys, make sure you subscribe to Jason
Jason Nash on YouTube. If for somehow you don't know who this guy is at this point.
I have some contacts at Hype House.
Oh,
if you want.
Oh,
so when you were doing Renegade.
Thank you so much, Jason, once again, and thank you guys so much for listening. Have a great day.
Yeah, Jay.
Jason. Bye, guys. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Thank you, Matt.